The Minnesota Rundown, presented by 10,000 Takes.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting edition of the Minnesota Rundown, presented by 10,000 Takes. I'm, of course, journalist Jake JJ, the host of this fine podcast. I want to welcome on both of our wonderful guests that we're bringing on for this week's show. We're bringing on Seth Topol. Is that it? I had to ask it. I'm terrible with names. I know I asked you just moments before we went on. I got it. I'm really bad with names. But Seth, you're of course the host of Locked On Wild. People may know you from Mini Ice in the past. And I know that that's kind of not going so far. But I mean, that was that you had a Jesus thing going Jake. With that. People might know you with that. Is that too soon? Is it too
no,
soon?
No. That's yeah. That's fine. Next project.
Right.
Is in the works.
It's in the works. But we want to. But you are doing Locked On Wild, yes. The host of that, which is a daily podcast, isn't it, for Minnesota Wild?
Yes. All it's covering that. It's a nice format. I like the format, too. They try to keep it right around 20 to 30 minutes every day. And, you know, I've been, since I took over in early April, have had a chance to try a bunch of different things. And it's going great. I mean, they've got a healthy audience, and I'm just glad to be able to try to throw some of my extremely elite wild takes out there.
Yeah, and we're looking forward to some of that today. We're going to dive into some wild stuff for sure. I also want to welcome on our other guest, our very own Dev, who is a blogger. He's one of our fantastic editors. He's kind of an all-around utility kind of dude here with 10,000 Takes. He's our very own Dev, like I just said. Dev, how's it going, man? I think this is like your third time on the show.
Yeah, that's correct. Fourth, if you can, history episode that had been lost to the bowels of time. Coming to you from my new home studio, which is to say we have a guest bedroom now. So that's where I'm at. Cheers.
Let's just go with guest studio, and you got a beer. What are you drinking there? That looks like some trippy ass can.
Yeah, so this is one of the local beers down here where I live in Charlotte, called from Noda Brewing is the company. And if you ever get a chance to come to Charlotte, North Carolina, Noda Brewing is one of the best. It's basically Noda and Sycamore and Legion. You can't go wrong with any of those three. This one is an Imperial Hazy IPA with a little bit of tangerine. It's from the Fusion series.
Sounds good.
Yeah. And so the whole like visual aesthetic of it was, you know, that meme template that's going around where like, it's just like the whites are at it again. And like criticisms like that with like the crazy font and the goofy background. So they basically, Noda is the hipster neighborhood of Charlotte, for lack of a better term. And the brewers and the owners of that brewery thought that was such a funny little like template and decided to make a bunch of beers kind of based off of that.
Do my eyes deceive me, or did you trick out your guest bedroom with a king bed?
This is a queen, but
it's a roomy queen. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's a roomy queen, but okay. I appreciate you. You know how they have like a California king? I wonder if they have if this is like a California queen. Because there have been nights where I've slept in this bed instead, cause our dog like, you know, threw up in our bed or something. And, I gotta say it's roomier than you would think for a queen.
Yeah, it looks good. You got the guest studio. Now if you need to spend long hours in there, you got a place to sleep and everything, you're good to go. So and I know you're drinking the Fusion. I think Seth, you're drinking good old Sprite.
Yeah, I got some McDonald's on the way here because you know,
McDonald's Sprite gives you super.
I'm ready for it.
So I do wanna just quickly maybe call it in. Everybody knows that McDonald's Sprite superpowers behind it. So like is this considered a PED? Do I just get like spotted a couple of votes at the end of the rundown, or how does this going to work? Cause Seth clearly has an advantage with, the McDonald's Sprite.
I was drug tested on the way in here. So, there is no issue.
All right. Well, I was going to say we have some fireball.
So it's like how boxing when they, yeah, there we go. So it's like in boxing when like you weigh in and then you immediately just start chowing down to bulk up as fast as you can.
Of course.
Got to give it a shot of the fireball. I know we have fireball somewhere in here, but no, we're not going to make you do that, Seth. We don't need to do that. But hopefully, it'll give you some power to bring on some powerful takes. But again, guys, too, if you feel inclined to vote on whoever you feel has had the better performance or better takes at the end of this episode, go on our Twitter. Any posts related to this week's episode, there should be a poll attached on our Twitter page at 10K underscore takes. There should be a poll there. You can either vote Dev or Seth. Last week we had Erin Laurie, the social media. She works in social media for the Minnesota Wild, and she went up against our very own AJ, and she won, I think, outright, like by a long shot, 76% to like 34%, something like that. So she kind of kicked her own guy's ass.
Kind of
so,
crushed it.
Yeah. So Dev, I don't know. I don't even know the last time a 10K guy won this, actually, in terms of the polls. So
wow,
see what happens.
Pressure on me then.
When it was 10K versus 10K. When it's 10K versus a guest, the guests are on a 6-week winning streak.
Really? That's crazy.
Yeah.
Hey, it's a lot of pressure on you, Seth.
We got this.
You got this shit, man. All right. Well, everybody kind of knows the gist of the show. We'll kind of dive into some relevant, pertinent topics happening really within Minnesota sports a little bit beyond, and we'll kind of hit on all those, and we'll give you both your time to discuss those like any other debate or discussion. So let's hop right into it. So the first topic of the Minnesota Twins, obviously they're not starting off too hot. A little concerning. Still a lot of baseball left, but people are really pissed off right now. I mean, it's frustrating to keep watching them, the Alex Colomé, all this shit. So, I mean, who's the blame for this mess so far? Is it a player? Is it Rocco Baldelli? I mean, what are your guys' thoughts on that? Seth, you can go first.
I'm going to put the blame on two people, Derek Falvey and Thad Levine. We were told heading into the season that the Twins had all this depth. They had this great farm system, you know, one of the best in baseball, that they had enough depth that if anything happened injury-wise to the likes of Josh Donaldson, Byron Buxton, which is stuff you have to assume is going to happen.
Yeah, you got a plan for that.
Basis. We were told that they had all this depth, and it's just not ready. We've seen Brent Rooker. He's not doing all that well. I know he hit a home run the other day. Alex Kirilloff finally getting a chance to come up, coincidentally, after his service time window hit to next year. Coincidence? I think not. But we're seeing that the depth just wasn't ready to step up as much as they've had to so far this year. You have Donaldson getting hurt right away to start the season. And Eddie Rosario is missed because they didn't really have another option in the outfield. I mean, sorry, folks, Jake Cave is probably not it. And they replaced Jake Cave being the fourth outfielder with another fourth outfielder. So you've got two pretty good outfielders and a whole bunch of players are just struggling offensively. Alex Colomé finally taken out of the closer's role for now. But I think we're just seeing the fact that this team doesn't have the ready depth like we thought they did. Now, they can certainly get that by the end of the season, but for now, it's ugly. It's real ugly.
So far, it does. Dev, would you agree with that? Is it on the ownership?
Well, I would say less so the ownership. Obviously, there's never any reason to not throw shit at the poll ads. Where somebody pointed out on Twitter today that we... it was when the Twins had this record of 7-14 yep. back in 2017 or
2016, I 16? Think like 5 years ago.
Yeah, but, yeah. 4 or 5 years ago, 16, 17, whatever year it was. Somebody pointed out that was the time that the poll ads dropped the infamous "this team is a dumpster fire" speech. And we're right here. I don't think that the team is a total dumpster fire just yet. I'm not willing to go down that far. We actually have, I did look this up. Whenever the Twins play exactly 9 innings, we actually have a pretty good record. We're like 8-2. The problem is we are 0-4 when we play 7 inning games, and we are after last night, we are 0-6 when we go to extra innings. We cannot win in fucking extras to save our fucking lives. So it's unbelievably frustrating. And, you know, I think ultimately it falls down on Falvey and Levine because they're the ones that they looked at our roster. They looked at how we got absolutely embarrassed by the fucking Astros. And they said, yeah, I think we're all right. I think we're in good shape. We'll add a reliever. And, like, in fairness to them, nobody could have expected that Alex Colomé would be this. Like, he – what's his name? Gleeman pointed out that going into this year, he had the second best win rate in all of over the last 5 years combined. He had the second best win rate as a closer. And so far this year, he has the worst wins probability added by a closer in baseball history through 8 games. So he has been just catastrophically bad. And as Seth pointed out, he's been pulled from the closer role. So who knows, maybe we'll see a little bit of Taylor Rogers. But there's been declines all the way down the roster, and we really didn't add any pieces in the offseason aside from Colomb, who, you know, Colomb. So as fun as it would be and easy as it would be to say, you know, it's probably Rocco's fault because he has the weirdest management timing of all time. Like he pulls Berríos when Berríos has a no-no going. You know, Rocco has made plenty of bad decisions as a manager, but ultimately I think that the lack of wins that we're seeing come straight from Falvey and Levine.
I talking about the extra innings thing, I blame Rob Manfred for these stupid rules. You know, that very well could be it stopped us from getting some wins. I mean, maybe affected a record.
Can we just go ahead and put it on record that the runner at second base in extra innings is the stupidest rule in all of sports?
Yes. Yeah. It makes absolutely no sense to me. So, and you know, when they're going in extra innings, they're going to lose. It was like when the Wild, when 3-3 over, they've done better up to this year. Every time the Wild went in that 3-3 overtime since like 2015 or 2016, when they enacted that rule, you knew they were going to lose, and they always lost.
Every time.
It's like the Twins in extra innings. Like, you know, they're going to lose because they can't figure it out.
The problem is, though, is last year we won like 80% of our games that went to extras. And
right. The
team is like mostly the same. So we all got like a little bit of a tease where we were all like, oh, well, you know, we'll be okay. It's going to be fine. Like, who cares? This is kind of a dumb rule, but it's not really affecting us. And then now we're seeing and suffering what every other fan base in Major League Baseball went through last summer. And we're just like, oh, this rule does fucking suck.
Yeah, it's like fix everything else or forget about everything else that could make baseball great. Hey, runner at second base and extra inning, that distracts you from all the other problems, right? No, it doesn't.
It makes absolutely no sense. It's and I heard Justin Morneau say this like a couple weeks ago when he was doing color. Fantastic, by the way. I love Justin. I love hearing him because he's like my favorite player after Torrey Hunter growing up. But anyway, he said like he totally, you know, disagrees with having, you know, the extra inning rule just because of the fact that it's not set there to have the best team win. It's set there to just to get the game over with.
Yeah, 100%.
That's all it is. That's all it is.
I agree.
It's so dumb. It's so fucking stupid. So literally, yeah, I mean, yeah, seriously, on a serious note, yeah, there's something wrong with the Twins and Rocco Baldelli and his analytics and all this stupid shit. But then there's just Rob Manfred just kind of screwing with the game, toying with the game. Like, you're already going with the pace of play, which I can get on with. You know, I can move with that a little bit, but don't start. I mean, actually,
if we're gonna talk about like the weird changes that have been made in the last year and a half, like I actually don't hate the 7-inning doubleheader thing. I don't love it, but it kind of works if we're trying to like, you know, get through and everything. Like I hate it from like a value sense of like you're basically cutting out 4 innings, you know, from, you know, what would have been. You know, it's what, half a game basically is what you lose out on. So like that, it kind of stinks if you're going out and you're paying for it. But from like a straight up, just like watch it and just breeze through it, you know, instead of having a 9-hour afternoon, all of a sudden you have like a 7-hour afternoon. It makes a little difference.
If Major League Baseball really wants to get fan bases back, they will look into why Anthony Edwards did not know who Alex Rodriguez was. Stop making all these like cosmetic changes. Try to market your athletes more.
Yeah, which the NHL, the NHL needs to take a fucking note from that too.
The NHL's not great at it, but it's like Mike Trout is your best player in your entire sport. I don't see him anywhere. He's not in any commercials. I mean, granted, he's a bland personality. Like he's extremely quiet, so that's not going to work, but you got to put him somewhere.
He's extremely fun to watch in terms of baseball. Like, and he kind of does have a little personality on the field a little bit. He's this big buff dude. I mean, people love that. They love John Cena. Well, market him as the John Cena of Major League Baseball. I don't know.
Have him
people
go to the
buy
box
in.
And just start doing this.
Yeah, yeah. Seriously, just do that. Like, well, just do it.
I would pay so much money to go to a game and watch Mike Trout just stare down a pitcher, especially if it was a pitcher like a Trevor Bauer or like a Jacob deGrom, like a good pitcher who like has a little bit of flair to him, and he just stares him down and just does the John Cena, you can't see me. I would pay almost, I would pay an infinite amount of money. I would, like, whatever is in my bank account, just have it. I would love that if that was a thing that I could regularly count on.
Just take my money, man, right away. But yeah, no, they need to do that stuff. If they, instead of like trying to speed up games, market, do something. They're just, that's not going to help people want to watch the game of baseball in itself. That's just stupid.
Mic up your players. I forget, it was a couple years ago and they had Mookie Betts mic'd up in the outfield, and he was in the middle of an interview and they hit a ball to him and he's like, oh, got to go. Hang on. And he went and I think he caught it.
Yeah,
right,
he did.
Right. Yeah. Like on ESPN.
That stuff is gold.
I know. Or maybe and we've bitched about this over and over on, we've done it, we bitched about it on our It's a Bit podcast and all that stuff, but also to drive in more fans, how about ESPN doesn't just have games against Boston and New York and Philadelphia, or once in a blue moon, like throwing the Twins against the Yankees, like
that's it.
Get some crazy interdivisional rivals, like, you know, the Florida Marlins and the Atlanta Braves. I don't know. I mean, just, you know, more teams involved, and then mic up all those players. You know, it's just stupid.
Grow the game.
And instead of Rob Manfred's like, we're going to speed up the game. Well, I people are not watching baseball because it's necessarily too slow. It's just, there's just not, people think of that. Yeah, it's a little slow, but then they're like, okay, they need to get pizzazz around it to get them to watch the games, go to the ballpark and sit down, because I think a lot of people would enjoy it.
You either die a hero or you live long enough to see yourself become the villain. I don't know what Rob Manfred did before becoming commissioner, but he is clearly living out being the villain right now.
Yeah, seriously. And he's going to get to be at Roger Goodell status very quickly. And in some people's minds, he kind of is. So
he has definitely passed Goodell.
Yeah, and speaking of speaking of the NFL, so segue into a nice segue from the Twins into the NFL draft coming up on Thursday. So some of you might be actually listening to this after the draft has happened. So please don't sit here, like if you're listening to it on Friday, this kind of a, you know, discretion here, that if we say something, well, you didn't get drafted.
Oh, I can't believe the Vikings didn't pick fucking McCorkle.
It's like, we get this is being recorded on a Tuesday. This is being released Wednesday, the day before the draft. Okay. So this is going to be all crazy shit happening. We understand there's going to be people listening to this after. So don't come after us, or come after us. It's actually funny. So, whatever.
Tell you what,
it's hilarious when people do that shit.
If I call whoever it is, we're going to just pimp that out all across social media. You know, same with Seth too. If we call who the Vikings pick at 14, which, you know, apparently after talking to the media today, Rick was saying that he might actually trade up, which, like, gasp, Rick Spielman trading up in the first round.
He's going to trade up. That's crazy.
I'll believe it when I see it.
Yeah, we'll see. It definitely feels like a smokescreen. But in fairness, like, nobody really knows anything about this draft, especially the later rounds, because there just has not been a ton there. So for the first time in a long time, Rick's coveted late round picks don't really have a ton of value. So, like, there's definitely a world where he trades up, and, you know, I think he'll probably trade up more in the middle rounds, maybe try and get back our second rounder that we gave up. Yeah. You know, I don't totally see him trading up in the first, but who fucking knows? If somebody drops, you know, Jake, not to step on your part here, but, like, I know the question is, are the Vikes going to draft a QB in the first round?
Is that really on the table? And I keep seeing a bunch of stuff about, oh, they're going to maybe go after Justin Fields. You know, I mean, I'll let you guys, you know, speak to it first, you know, but.
Well, Chris Sims had Justin Fields falling to the fucking Buccaneers at 32. So, like,
oh my God.
And that's not going to happen. Like, I think we all have our heads outside of our asses,
and
we can all acknowledge that Justin Fields is not going to fall to 32. I think we can all agree with that.
He's a little better than that. A little bit.
So
just a wee bit.
Yeah. So I say that to say, is there a world where the Vikings trade up and draft a Fields? Maybe. I mean, if he really is falling, like everybody seems to suggest that he is, and it goes Lawrence Wilson, Mac Jones, Trey Lance, and Kyle Pitts, and then Penei Sewell. All of a sudden, we're at 8 or 9, and Fields is still on the board. Going from 14 to 9 is not as costly as going from 14 to 4 would be. So maybe it happens. I don't think it will. I anticipate that we'll probably go with either an offensive lineman or a defensive lineman. You know, somebody like Darisaw or Rashawn Slater. Those are the two guys that I think that we're going to wind up landing on. I know on the official 10K mock draft, Christian Laver, lawyer.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Laver. I think it's Laver.
Laver.
Yep. Our very own blogger.
Our very own. Yeah. It's the kind of thing where I've been editing this guy's blogs for 6 months and I have no idea how to pronounce his name. And it happened in a blog today where we tried to give him some love and we still typed out lawyer and even I missed it. So
let's just call him the lawyer.
I've been calling him.
That should just be his nickname.
Well, so my thing is ever since we lost Billy Brew, we definitely need to have our chief legal counsel. So why not just change his name? Right.
Yeah, and then he's automatically our lawyer.
Exactly.
Fuck it.
Whether he has an education or not. Anyway, sidetrack.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's just an entertainer, dude.
Sidetrack to say, he put out an incredible mock draft of every pick in the first round, and he had the Vikings taking Patrick Surtain the second, cornerback, shocker, out of Alabama. Maybe that even happens. You know, when I originally read it, I was like, that's a fucking stupid pick, but I am an Auburn fan. I have watched Alabama football, unfortunately, because I have to, because we play them every year. So like I have seen all of their players and obviously they make it into the playoffs and everything. So like I've seen this kid play. He's very good. The Vikings suddenly turns out our first round pick last year is a total piece of shit. And, you know, yikes. to be clear, in case anybody doesn't know, I'm talking about Jeff Gladney, not Justin Jefferson, who is, as far as I'm concerned, the sweetest angel alive. He is a terrific human,
yes.
And he has his own Fortnite dance now. So good for him. Anyway,
huge.
Jeff Gladney, total piece of shit. Fucking unbelievable. So apparently the Vikings are in need of a corner because we can't really show up with the corpse of Mike Hughes and Cameron Dantzler.
You can't rely on that.
No.
It's just crazy. Well, I mean, yeah, Seth, what are your thoughts on this whole draft? Is a quarterback really on the table, or do you think they're more realistic, probably go after a tackle, defensive guy?
I look at it like this. In Mike Zimmer and Rick Spielman, they are obviously trying to do whatever they can to win every single year because of job security, and rightfully so. This team has needed offensive line help for, I don't know, 10, 15 years consecutively. And they have addressed it in a lot of minor ways, not ways that have made a huge impact. And they don't have a hugely successful record of taking linemen in the first round. Matt Khalil obviously did not work out. Garrett Bradbury had a rough start. He came on strong. But I think what is going to end up happening is that second round void is just too tantalizing for Spielman to stay at 14. And I think what's going to end up happening for us, unfortunately, is that one of those lineman prospects, or maybe all of them that we want, go before us at 14. So then at that point, Rick says, okay, let's get some more picks. Let's try to get some quantity here in this draft. And so he drops back into the 20s, mid 20s, gets that second round pick. We end up getting probably a cornerback or a defensive lineman because Mike Zimmer can't help himself. And honestly, after what we saw last year, how can you blame him?
Yeah.
So I think they're going to trade back and accumulate a couple more picks, go defense, and then they'll snag some under the radar lineman in round 2.
You know, I still, we could have had the best defense in the league last year, and Zimmer and Spielman, Zimmer would still be like, no, we're going after a tackle, a defensive tackle. I'm a defensive guy. I mean, he's such a defensive guy.
Gotta beef that lineup.
Well,
he's always on top of that, I feel like.
So two things that are both going to be kind of defending Zimmer. One, we could have.
No,
had...
you can't defend Zimmer on this. Nope, he's done. No,
listen, listen. You cannot flim-flam the Zimzam, as we all know. And
the Zimzam.
So Zimmer,
that.
There are some valid criticisms of Zimmer. You know, he is loyal to a fault to his guys, to the point where he doesn't want to let guys walk that probably should walk. I get that. There are valid criticisms there, but last year showed that, like, and like last year is a little different because of COVID and because we had, on the defensive side of the ball, we had the second most injuries across the league. And that's not even counting the fact that our supposed three technique, Michael Pierce, just opted out of the season. So, according to, I forget what the website is called, but I looked it up for work, and I remember seeing that the lost man gains is what the stat is basically like starters that missed time. The Vikings were second only to San Francisco on the defensive side of the ball. And so, yeah, it makes sense that the Vikings and Zim want to shore up the defense. I do think that they understand that the offense is pretty fucking good. It just needs a better offensive line. And who knows? I would hope that they go with, you know, take that route. But this is a weaker interior line class on both the offensive and the defensive side of the ball. And that's really where our weaknesses are. So who knows, maybe Seth is right. And they trade back because there's not a, you know, five-star stud at left tackle that we can draft, and we can just take cornerback number 4 at 24 and we get that tantalizing second round pick back.
That's all I'm saying.
I mean, all this is hearsay. All this is speculation because anything can happen.
Yeah,
especially this year. We'll know within a day here. I mean, who knows? Maybe the Vikings will get Trey Lance. Oh my gosh, there'd be a lot of pissed off people. But then you have a lot of toxic Vikings fan like, yes, bench Kirk Cousins right away.
One of us.
We need to get this guy.
One of us.
Would the fan base like totally cannibalize itself if that happens?
I honestly, maybe the Vikings, all the Vikings fans may go an all-out civil war and may start killing each other.
Like there's just this massive fight, like the Josh fight.
Yeah.
And it's the anti Cousins, the pro Trey Lance, the both factions just going right at each other. And then after like 2 hours, Twitter is just a completely non-toxic place. Nature is healing.
I think that's a great point though, because look, at the end of the day, right now, anything, I don't think that Rick is probably not going to make a pick to appease or anger the fans. He might, because it's kind of funny. Like if he thinks that Trey Lance is the guy and he's available at 14, or we trade up to 6 or whatever the fuck, and he thinks that Trey Lance could be the guy, and also like as an added benefit, it would be hilarious to watch the fans. Power to him, you know, like Rick was talking about today in his presser. He was saying that he's trying to spy on George Payton and see what Payton is going to do, because obviously Payton was with him for 15 years and is now the GM of the Broncos. So he's trying to be like, hey, that's my guy. So like, I'm totally going to just like, you know, trade rape him and just wreck him. And, you know, who knows? If we have to do our official picks, I'm going to say Vikings snag Christian Darrisaw.
Ooh.
He is a left tackle. I think he went to Virginia Tech. One of the Virginias. Oh, you know what? It was Virginia Tech, because that's no, West Virginia is the Big 12 school. It was an ACC school. So anyway.
Yeah. Yep.
Carry on.
That's
my official guess.
The official pick.
The Vikings get sniped. They trade down to like 22. And they'll take defense. That's my
give a guy in mind.
And that's probably realistic.
I think that's a very realistic pick. Give a guy in mind.
You know, I have done as much prep for the NFL draft this year as I've done any other season, which is absolute zero.
Right. And you don't need to. You just look at some top especially with the Vikings, you got to just look, okay, who are the top five defensive guys on the draft board on ESPN? All right, they're going to try to pick maybe one of these guys with Rick Spielman and Zimmer. You know, that's probably going to happen.
I use the same strategy that mostly got me through college. I don't prepare. I react.
Yep.
So whatever happens in the draft, I'll say, okay, that's who they got, as opposed to trying to like mock draft and say, you know, here's my big board.
Mm-hmm. No. I got my big board. Because in the end, it doesn't matter. The draft's going to happen. You're going to see what happens, you know. Okay, but it is fun to speculate, predict, and all that, see if you're right. But it's going to happen. I think the Vikings, I think you could see them get a quarterback in the later rounds. I think I saw one mock draft. They had like Felipe Franks from Arkansas. And, like,
oh, God,
round.
No. Yeah.
Oh, wow, we have no
that,
and yes.
That name I know.
It's a great name, but he's so fucking bad.
Hey. Are you yes on the name, Seth, or are you like, or the both that
if
he's
I'm,
could
if
be
I'm
good?
Being honest, I have not watched any film. Okay. I'm just yes on the name.
I've been watching SEC football for a decade.
I would probably trust his judgment.
I've seen Felipe Franks play at Florida and at Arkansas.
Felipe.
He is very fun.
Dog
water. He's kind of a goofy looking fella, and he's the kind of quarterback where you're like, oh, I could do that. And so like he inspires the common man. But goddamn, do I not want him anywhere near the Vikings starting role.
God, what a
hey,
name, though.
Look.
Great
Tom
name.
Brady.
Fantastic.
I'm just
going to
say
name.
One name. Tom Brady. Okay? That's a cool name. Well, maybe not as cool as Felipe Franks.
Not as cool as Felipe Franks.
We can't, if he's a late round, maybe he could be that gem. He could be our Tom Brady.
If we get Felipe Franks in like the sixth round, sure. But every time I see his name pop up, it's like the second or third. And absolutely No, thank you.
I think the mock draft, I think the Vikings had him in the fifth round, which might be still a little high, but
I could live with that.
I can live with it. You're not going to see.
I'd rather just bring back Kyle Sloter.
Yeah. You're not going to really see second with the whatever pick in the second round, the Vikings select Felipe Franks. That would probably piss off a lot of people. But, you know, you kind of want to see it. You want, like we said, you kind of want to see Rick Spielman anger some people because I just love people going off on social media about this and that and thinking they know everything. And
we are due. That's a really good point. We are due for the classic what the fuck Rick moment. Because I feel like the last couple of years he's drafted at least at the time well in the first round. Everybody's like, oh, I like that pick. Yeah. So we are due for a Rick Spielman getting, you know, drafting like a Laquon Treadwell. Be like, hey, doesn't that guy just have one leg? Like I remember in the moment, like I was at the game when Laquon Treadwell broke his leg in half. And it happened 10 feet in front of me. I was filming in the end zone. And I remember watching that and I was like, ooh. He's never going to be the same player again. And I was right. And then two years later, the Vikings drafted him. I tried. I sent him emails. I guess he blocked me. I did the Eric Andre outside of what was then Winter Park and is now TCO Performance Center. Like, let me in.
I need to give Rick some very important information. Yeah. We have like 10 guys that do that every day. Please leave.
I hope, for one, I never see another broken leg highlight video on Twitter ever again after the last two
nights.
The
UFC fight and all that. Oh, that was brutal. That was brutal. Don't want to see that again.
Yeah. Sorry I ruined the show by throwing
No, it's good shit, though. I mean, it's crazy stuff like that, though, that just, you know, makes us go through the emotions, you know, and feel what it's like being human, so... I mean, it's all
trying
good,
to feel
man.
Something.
You got to feel something, man. I don't feel anything anymore. So, no.
Quick side note, if I may.
Yes.
What's the
go for it?
Real quick, like off the top of your head, what's the worst leg break that you can recall, and you can't say Kevin Ware?
The Kevin Ware thing sucked.
I think the Kevin Ware is the like I almost threw up watching that. So I think that's kind of universally considered the worst one. So what's your worst one? Because
I mean,
one.
Honestly, how can you top the? It's Weidman, right?
From the other night?
White Weidman, yeah.
How can you top that one because of the fact that he tried to take a step on the leg?
God, yeah.
Because usually you see it in football, like the Alex Smith one was brutal, but you didn't see it in real time. Like, you had to look at a replay, and it still was brutal. But the Weidman one, you saw it in real time, and just you saw everything. You're like, usually you have to, like, you see, like, in football, you kind of see the player on the field, like, oh, wow, did he pull a hamstring? Then you see the replay, you cringe, but...
I'm reliving it now.
Yeah, no.
The Weidman thing is like, oh.
If anybody's not watching this and they're just listening, Seth and I are both gagging, like visibly gagging at Jake just talking about it.
No, it's brutal.
I think the worst one I've ever seen was back in the late 2000s when EJ Henderson broke his femur. And on the play, he kicked himself in the face. And that was the most disgusting thing I've ever seen.
That was bad. That was... If you haven't seen it, just look up EJ
Henderson. No, just save yourself and don't. Yeah. It's not good.
I'm gonna suggest no on that one, too.
Yeah. We don't suggest it, but at the same time...
Don't.
Maybe
just,
I do?
Just stop it, Jake. Please. Yeah.
I'm sorry. I just like seeing
it's one of those late
break.
Night come home from the bar things where you're just... You're a little too fucked up to know what you're looking at.
Yeah.
You're like,
oh, whoa.
Okay.
You're like, whatever. But then...
He's dancing.
Yeah, and then you wake up the next morning and you're like, holy shit.
Your YouTube search history is like 40 videos of broken legs.
Oh, it's just brutal. There's so much shit on the internet as well. Ugh. But well, moving away from the legs breaking and the NFL draft, talking about the hometown Wild. They just clinched a playoff spot. They were the third team to do it in the league. I think Carolina Hurricanes just became the fourth of the 16 teams.
They sure did. With 69 points.
Sure
nice.
You Carolina bastard. No, I'm just joking.
Hey, let me be
You're
very
a Wild
clear.
Fan, okay, Dev?
Let me be
stop.
Very clear. Wild first and foremost, 100% of the time.
Okay.
Zero loyalty question here whatsoever. The fact that we only play the Hurricanes twice a year on a normal year has allowed me to root for them. The fact that the Hurricanes...
For every single game.
Yeah, basically 80 out of 82 games is pretty good. Yeah. And
your side piece.
Well, they're definitely my side piece, but the thing, so like, there's not really a side piece equivalent of this because they also have my favorite player up before Kirill Kaprizov joined the league in Nito Niederreiter. So,
El Nino.
Yeah, I'm El still Nino. Bitter about that trade, if we're being honest.
Victor Rask.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Carolina. I've told this story on Seth's podcast before, but Nino has been my favorite player for, at the time, 4 or 5 years. And I finally was making good money. I, was in a spot where I could, and I decided to treat myself. I bought myself a Niederreiter jersey. And the day before it was scheduled to arrive, he got traded. So, was not pleased. And then the Wild happened to play him, the Wild played the Hurricanes in Raleigh. So I drove 2.5 hours, got, seats like 5 off the glass where the Hurricanes come out of the tunnel. And then the whole time that every time the players would go in and out, I just yelled, Nino, come home. Nino, please. I miss you.
Nino. Or you'd be like drunk guys behind me back when he played for the Wild that would totally butcher his name. Oh, I think that's Niedermeyer. No, that's not Niedermeyer. That's not even.
Yeah,
what are you talking about? It's Niederreiter.
Yeah, Niedermeyer plays for the Habs.
Niedermeyer. I heard
Netminder.
Netminder.
I will say one thing that the Wild game ops never did for Nino that the Hurricanes game ops have done is they play a Metallica song every time that he scores a goal now, and Perfect. You may know the song. Every time that Nino scores in the arena, it just goes, give me fuel, give me fire, give me Nino, need a rider. And it's one of my favorite things in the entire
well
NHL.
Played.
The Wild missed out on an opportunity there. That's perfect. That's
Big
honestly
time.
Genius.
Because
it's fantastic.
Names
in there. It's Metallica. It's an upbeat song for hockey. Fuck it. That's awesome. But, well, as I was kind of going on, though, Wild, obviously, they clinched a playoff spot, and they're going back into the playoffs for, what could be the eighth or ninth time in the last 11 years, decade, whatever. They've made it to the playoffs quite a few times.
Eighth and nine seasons.
Eighth and nine seasons, including if you count last year, for sure. So... It's looking, as of right now, the playoffs started today. They play Colorado. Anything can happen, but it's looking like that now a little bit, which is terrifying to some fans, being Colorado's just had our number all year. They've been like the one team we've really struggled against, despite a few games. But, is there any reason to believe that this team is different from all the past teams of the last decade that got booted in the first round, or even if they did, there were two teams that made it to the second round, but they kind of got obliterated in that round. Is there any reason to believe this team is different that will not disappoint us? Are we going to be disappointed again?
Well,
can we get our hopes up?
I say yes, because they still have a
yes to being
chance.
Disappointed, or yes to you.
Yes to getting our hopes up, because who else do we have to root for right now?
Yeah. It's very easy to do that. That's why we do it.
The other thing, though, is the Wild still have a legitimate chance to flip and get the two seed to where they would host the series against the Avalanche, which I think swings things majorly in our favor.
Yep.
Vegas, honestly, I think we match up better against or the road. I think if we can get home field against the Avalanche, that's going to be massive for that series. And the other reason that I think we can be more hopeful about this team than any of those happy to be here Wild season teams of the past, the reason that we always lost out to those teams in the past is because they had somebody that could win games on their own. We have that now. We have a guy in Kirill Kaprizov that can win games by himself and can be the best player on the ice, and he has a deep, deep team around him. So he doesn't necessarily have to do it all himself, but he can if he needs to. And all those other Wild teams that we had in the mid-2010s, those plucky little, like, get in, get the 8 seed, and, you know, hey, maybe we can catch fire and we can do something, and then they get just swept in the first round. They never had that guy. They had good players. They had good players that were good complementary players. Kaprizov is that good right now that he can take over a series.
I agree completely. I will say that...
Mic drop.
I agree with what Seth is saying in the sense of, like, for the first time in over a dozen years, we have a true legitimate game breaker. And on top of that, we also have a second-tier game breaker in Kevin Fiala. You know, another guy who, when he's not trying too hard, he can absolutely break a game wide open. I will say I don't want any disrespect for the 13-14 Wild team that took it to the Avs. And that was like, that's the one, like, every time I think, like, okay, if we get the two seed and we have to make Avs play in our barn set, you know, if it goes to seven, I keep thinking back to that 13-14 season where the away team went 7-0.
Yep.
The away team won every single game. And, you know, we were really good on home ice that year. We were really good on home ice this year. There's so many parallels is not the right word, because obviously this Wild team is quite a bit, is just built differently. And, but it is a younger Wild team that has wily vets that is entering its prime window rather than, like, in its prime or, like, closing out, like in, like, the 17 season, where we just had a series stolen from us by Jake Allen and Martin Hansel.
Gross.
Yeah. I will say if, it is looking, so from, like, the direct standings matchup, it is looking like we're going to play Colorado. However, Colorado has 3 games in hand on Las Vegas and they're only 4 points back. So, and I think 3 of those games are against Vegas. So if the Avs win all 3 of those games, all of a sudden Colorado's in first by a long shot. Dom at the Athletic, Dom Luchushin. I am in his DMs all the time, just like saying, hey, so I'm hoping that I got that right. And I will send him this clip and he can confirm or deny, but he puts out the pie chart basically of, like, how likely each team is to advance all the way up to the cup finals.
The percentages.
Yeah. By the percentages. And he still is thinking that one of the more likely scenarios is that the Avs get the 1 seed, which would then put them against St. Louis, almost guaranteed, because the Coyotes got their shit kicked in last night. And funny enough, as bad as we say that we match up against Colorado, they match up worse against St. Louis. Like, that St. Louis team is built to beat the Avalanche. And so that's kind of the dream scenario, if we're being honest. Like, I firmly am in the camp of, if you want to be the best, you got to beat the best. So, like, if we have to play Colorado in the first round and it leads to another first round exit, so be it. That sucks, but we shouldn't feel, like, down about that, because, like, we were supposed to be, like, maybe competing for the four spot this year, and we're very firmly in the three and have a chance to go for the two. And real, not realistically, but like we have an outside chance at the one seed. It's not going to happen, but it is still mathematically possible, like 15% chance happening. So there's a world where this all, you know, there's a world where this all works out. Here's the other thing. As I've watched however many Avalanche games this year, both against the Wild and against other teams, I've noticed that outside of their, they have basically two phenomenal lines up front, three just unbelievable defensemen, and a one pretty good goalie, and everybody else is like average or worse. So in a playoff round, in a playoff scenario, you can't get by on just having your first two lines go out and just utterly dominate, and then your bottom two lines just get wrecked. Because in the playoffs, you just don't have that ability to just bounce back from that. If all of a sudden, like the Wild have had the best third, you know, one of the best third and fourth lines for 10 years, it feels like, where we're always consistently a top five, bottom six line team. And that's something that we're able to use to our advantage in the postseason against a team like Colorado, only because we now have that game breaker on the top line.
Kirill Kaprizov, the Soviet savior, Kirill the Thrill.
The God.
Amen.
Yeah.
The other one other thing that I like about this team, just to kind of throw in, is that it's felt like for so long that they have to win games 2-1. It's like, oh, if you can just get us two goals and just kind of squeak it out and grind it out for the rest of the game. How many times have we seen the Wild score three goals in like a 2-minute span this year? Oh, they can win games 6-3, 7-3.
It's been beautiful.
It's
so fun.
It's such an elite offense now that you don't have to worry about like, God, if this team scores one goal on our goalie, we might be screwed. Mm-hmm. Like, they could win a game 5-4.
Yeah.
It's been absolutely beautiful to watch. I want to pull up a quick advanced metric here.
You and your stats.
The stats guy. Oh, we got stats guy here, Dev.
So, yeah, no, big giant nerd here. This one comes from Micah Blake McCurdy on Twitter. He runs hockeyviz.com. It's a great site. And so he basically, what he does is he has tiers dedicated here. So there's a graph that I'm looking at. I'm not just pulling this out of my ass. And the tiers are basically how good your offense is versus how good your defense is versus how good your team is overall. And in there, so the tier of score early and coast, the three teams that are in that tier are the Vegas Golden Knights, the Colorado Avalanche, and your hometown Minnesota Wild. I don't think that it's a coincidence that those three teams have been dominant in the first and third periods all year, and they get up to a 2 or 3-0 lead, and then they just, whatever happens, happens. And like Seth said, we finally have the ability to just keep burying teams like that, where we're not worried, like, are we going to lose this one 2-1? Are we going to lose this one 1-0? It feels like no matter what happens, our team is able to put up 2, 3, 4+ goals a game, and our goalies are able to stop the ones that they're supposed to for, you know, the first time in a couple of years since that Dubé Vezina season in 17. So it's been 4 years, and we now finally have two goalies that we can rely on. Cam Talbot is in the top five in the league and goals saved above expected. And Kaapo Kähkönen, if you take away his one horrible game against St. Louis, is in the top 30. So he's a starting caliber goalie that way, and he's our 1B.
So nice to have a competent power play too.
Oh my God.
After the start of the season.
Oh yeah. That was not looking good.
I remember looking
like
at
the top half of the league, you know.
It's something when you are X amount of games into a season and you are setting the like historically worst pace all time for power play, and thank God they're not in that realm now. But you know, if there's hope,
that's the thing. We've been basically 50% on the power play for a month, and we're just now getting to the league average.
Well, if there's hope that the Wild can turn the power play around, there's hope the Twins can turn around too.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, because they turned that shit around on the, you know, it took them a couple months.
It's
but
amazing what happens when you just shoot the puck.
I know, seriously. And you don't Mike Yo that shit where you're just trying to like look for every little perfect seam. Like that is just totally against what you should be doing. Totally against the game and strategy of the game of hockey. It's so stupid.
My Mike Yo power play analogy that I've always used is that you're going around in a parking ramp trying to find a spot. You find one, looks a little tight, so you're like, you know, I'll find another spot somewhere else. And so you keep driving. And the next thing you know, you've spent like 15 minutes trying to find a parking spot, and whatever you had to do is like in 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. So you've wasted all of your time looking for a spot as opposed to just taking like the first good one you find.
Oh, yeah. Great. Today I learned on Mike Yo.
Yeah. No, that's exactly how it is. That's how you sum it up. I've done that before so many times.
Drives me nuts.
You see a spot kind of farther out. I'm going to see if there's one closer. No, you can't do that anymore. That's exactly what Mike Yo did to demolish the Wild's power play when he was here. But we were talking about the goalies. We were having reliable goalies in Talbot and Kaapo Kähkönen, the CAC cock blocker, I should say. And this kind of reminds me of, we have a reliable duo here. And you look at the early 2000s when the Wild made their deepest run in the playoffs in 2003, they had Dwayne Rolison and Manny Fernandez. And I think they kind of swapped out and they were a reliable duo to come in. Each of them had great games. And I mean, the question I want to ask is this goalie duo of Talbot Kähkönen better, more pristine than the notorious Wild duo of the early 2000s and Manny Fernandez and Dwayne Rolison? Or is that saying too much? Is that, I don't know.
This is a great question, by the way. I think something that has really helped Talbot and Kähkönen have such great seasons this year is the defense in front of them. I looked at some of the defenders that Rolson and Fernandez had. I have never heard of some of those names that were in front of them. So obviously...
No, yeah, you look back at those rosters like, oh, I don't know who that was.
And like, you've got Spurgeon, you've got Brodin, you've got...
Wait, so just so I'm clear, you guys are saying that you guys don't remember Ladislav Beniasek?
Not really.
Nope. I mean,
it's a great name.
There are definitely
though.
Guys I remember. I mean, for sure, during those, but
yeah,
it wasn't as like you could name. There are a lot more elite, I would say, elite players on, you know, now.
Oh yeah,
versus back then, it was like who, like the person you just named, like who's like
yeah,
Marian Gaborik, maybe Pascal Dupuy, and you know, Brent Burns, stuff like that.
I mean,
so.
Yeah, but like, I mean, there were some like legit guys. Like, there was like a Brad Bombardier.
Well, Brent Burns wasn't on that team yet.
Brent Burns was like three or 4 years away at that point.
He was like 2004, I think we drafted him or something like that. Yeah. So, but like, he was like, but still.
But like that year, you had like Brad Bombardier, you had Philip Kuba. Like, there were some legit guys.
Philip Kuba, for sure. I love Philip Kuba.
Yeah, but like, then there was also your Ladislav Beniasek. And I definitely looked that name up because I remember laughing at the name when I was, you know, like 13, but I couldn't tell you that I would have been able to pull that one out of a hat otherwise.
Yeah, it was just some
I've never heard of him, so
yeah.
But yeah, like they just have such an elite defensive group in front of them that has helped. Now, that's not to say that they haven't done the work themselves, but I think that's made all the difference is having those guys in front of them. I mean, Jesus, that defensive group got Devin Dubnyk's corpse and Alex Stalock to the playoffs last year.
Mm-hmm.
It's a hell of a group that they've got. And I mean, they did that trade for Ian Cole to really shore up that third line, which was such a weird trade at the time. It worked out amazingly well. So I don't know if they're better. I mean, Talbot is certainly very established at this point, and we were hoping that he'd have a bounce back after his last couple of seasons, and Kaapo was mostly unproven coming in, so there are definitely parallels, but I think the defense is way better around these two than it was around Fernandez and Rolson at that point. So I don't know, better, it's hard to say.
Yeah,
I
stuff.
Yeah, I agree with your general point where the defense is way better now than it was then. And that, you know, no disrespect to my favorite let me look actually where he was from. Romanian player, Ladislav Venisac.
Ladislav Venisac.
Wow.
Yeah.
God, I don't even remember that guy.
Yeah. No disrespect to him at all, but you know, he's no Jared Spurgeon.
Is it too late to get a jersey?
Yeah. I'm sure the old school wild jersey.
If you can show, yeah, if you can find that like '03-'04 wild sweater with a Benyasek on it, like power to you.
Gold.
If anybody's listening has one, call me. I will buy it.
Someone has one somewhere.
Someone has 100%. It. It's just a matter of it's just a matter of if they are listening right now and if they are willing to sell, because they should be, because I will pay top dollar. I don't know what that dollar amount is going to be, but it's going to be more than you would think. And probably my wife should find out. But it's going to be a lot.
It's got to be a sneak purchase.
So I agree that the overall, the defense in front of the goalies is much better. And I remember when I was looking this up, I was like, oh, I wonder, you know, kind of like, How do they stack up from a number standpoint? And there's not the advanced analytics, you know, going back and be like, oh, well, the goal saved above expectation is this and blah, blah, blah. You know, they just don't have that data, at least that I could find. So I'm resorted to the just basic box score stats if we're going to be the numbers guy again.
Numbers guy.
Yeah, man.
He's the numbers guy.
Woo. So here's where we're at. And these numbers may surprise you. In 2021, as a team, our combined save percentages as between Talbot and Kakanen, I don't think any other goalies have gotten in. I know Andrew Hammond was like the. I know no. Andrew Hammond was like up there, and I know that. Why am I blanking on the dude's name down in Iowa? Barabo, Derek Barabo. I know that he was like.
I'd say Rob.
I know that both of them were like,
gosh, that's bad.
They hit backup status, but yeah, I don't think anybody else.
I don't
ever
think
started.
They think it was Kakanen and Talbot.
I don't think anybody else has gotten in the game. So just between those two, the combined save percentage is 916, which is pretty good. It's not bad. Mm-hmm. The goals against is 2.6. Again, not bad. If you take away that horrible 9-goal game where Kakanen just looked terrible, if you just pretend that game didn't happen.
Yep.
Didn't happen. Snap it away.
Yep.
Snap it away like Thanos. You're now with a 9.21 save percentage and a GAA of 2.42, which are like both like really good numbers. Mm-hmm. Here's how good the goalies were, the Dwayne Rolison and Manny Fernandez duo. Here's how good those two were. In the season in which they led us to a Western Conference final, their combined save percentage was 9.24, and their GAA was 2.16.
Oh my God!
On that defense, on Romania, that on defense, a team with Romanian guys we never even heard of,
with Ladislav Benyasek anchoring the second pairing, they posted a 9.24 save percentage and a 2.16 GAA. So we need to give credit where credit is due.
Yes.
Because Dwayne Rolison and Manny Fernandez are way better than we remember. And now part of that is there has been an uptick in offense in the last 10 years. Mm-hmm. That's just a fact. It is easier to score now than it was in 03. Not that much, though. And with how bad that defense was and how good those two netminders were, I have to give it to them for now. Because I think that as you pointed out, Seth, Talbot came in off a down year, but apparently Billy G had like spots basically where he was like, our defense is good at forcing the offense to shoot from these locations, and Talbot stops, you know, 95% of these stops. Great.
He did his homework.
Yeah, he did his homework. He found his guy and he made that decision like right away. And we're like, oh shit, okay, Bill. Good job, Bill. Kakanen was a relative unknown. I think he played in like 6 games last year. He had a 2.8 GAA. He had like a 9.0. It was a 9.0 something. I don't remember the exact number, but it was below 9.10, which like not bad for a rookie that came in basically on the second half of back-to-backs playing against, you know, the other teams and just kind of doing his best with nothing really to play for. I thought he played really well last year, but even I couldn't have expected him to play as well as he did this year. And he still has plenty of room to grow, obviously, but they still are not posting up the numbers that we saw from the Manny Fernandez and Dwayne Rollison duo. So I gotta give it to them.
Lie.
Yeah. I mean, that's just, I was obsessed with Manny Fernandez as a kid. I loved Manny Fernandez. I love Marian Gabrick, of course, but I feel something like about Manny Fernandez. And
you're not, so that's the thing. I'm, how old were you, Jake? Because I know you're younger than both Seth and I. So you were, you must have been like, what, seven in like
yeah,
Manny
old
Fernandez
three.
Prime?
I mean, yeah. So, I mean, yeah. So I was like seven, eight, nine, 10 years old. I was, yeah.
Yeah.
Young lad.
There, it feels like everybody that I know that is basically between your age and my age that likes hockey and followed hockey and was around for like the beginning of the Wild, it feels like everybody in that demographic, that very specific niche, every single person, understandably, fucking loves Manny Fernandez.
Oh, of mm-hmm. course.
Which, like, what's not to love?
I don't know, when I was a kid, I mean, I grew up playing goalies, so I was just always looked at the goalies
yep.
in general. I love Dwayne Rollison, but I think I loved Manny Fernandez. I think I just liked the name too. Manny Fernandez. It was just a badass name. And I'm like, this is awesome. And then, you know, you kind of, you know, some of the, I mean, and then you have a goalie like Tim Thomas of Boston Bruins, like in 2010, who I like too, but it's just a basic name. And you have Manny Fernandez, which is crazy. But no, I think yeah. that's why I kind of just, you know, like to follow him and stuff. And he was a great, whenever I went to games as a kid, he'd be in net and he was just fantastic. But I love Dwayne Rollison too. He was amazing.
Fernandez seemed like he just had so much swag too.
He had so much swag.
He was good and he knew it.
Maybe not as much as Ilya Bryzgalov.
Oh.
But
yep.
That guy was on a whole other planet.
Man.
And you could go in a conversation about him, but the dude was insane. But it's cool that you brought up those stats, Dev, on that. But, I mean, there's something about Talbot and Kakinen. There's something about having a hot goaltender. We at least have confidence in goalies. Devan Dubnyk, it wasn't all there. Stalock, you know, I like Stalock, but he was a smaller guy, and he would be a little too aggressive sometimes, and they would be able to beat him out. You know, they would be able to find ways to get to him. And
him, like, chasing the puck behind
Joe
the net.
Be crazy.
Oh, my God. Like, just stay where you are.
Oh, my God, no. I love Alex Stalock. This is a pro Alex Stalock podcast here.
Yes, 100%.
Yep.
I don't know.
So simple guy.
I don't know if I've ever had more heart palpitations. There's two times in which my heart, three times in which my heart can't take the palpitations is a Vikings kicker is going up to clinch a winner. An Auburn offense, not a kicker, because we always have pretty good kickers. Auburn offense has to convert on like fourth and one or like third and one. And Alex Stalock playing the puck at the dot. It just terrified me every single time. And he only got burned like three times on it, but like, goddamn, man. Every single time. It's just crazy.
it was terrifying. But now with these two goalies, we're a little better, so but whatever. I think that will about wrap up another episode. I think before we go, just one final question, just quick, circling back to football. Roger Goodell, I know he mentioned big thing about him that he's fully vaccinated. He can hug the players
he's
now. He's going to hug the players. I mean, yes or no, if you were up on the stage and you opened up his arms to give him a hug, what would you do? Would you give him a hug?
Going right in.
You're going right into Roger Goodell.
I forget the name of the lineman, but the picture where he's like close
Tunsil.
To him.
Oh, yeah.
So intimate. Like,
mm-hmm. That was weird.
That was uncomfortable to even look at that picture.
It's I was sweating while looking at that. It's like, that's Jesus, an awkward dude. Dev, would you hug Mr. Goodell?
I would, begrudgingly, only because if he opens up, I have so much Minnesota nice in me that I wouldn't be able
to. You feel obligated to?
I wouldn't be able to just be like, nah, man. Like I on like TV, they've made such a big to do about the fact that he's A, vaccinated, and B, planning on hugging people, that like once he does it, I would just be kind of like, all right, you know what? I'm getting $5 million in 2 days. Like, this is fine.
Maybe a fancy like handshake, or like,
if that happens,
this is a fist bump, man.
I'd be cool with like the fist bump, whatever. But like, if Goodell tries to do like a fancy handshake with somebody, I might never stop laughing.
And you imagine like at near the end of the first rounds, like he's up, he's been up at that podium with all those lights on him. So he's probably got a good sweat going.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
No, so I'm not going into that.
Yeah. If you're a ladder round, I regret being so aggressive about like, I'm going in there. No, like, no.
Yeah, if you're pick 32,
let's not make that happen.
If you're pick 32, if you're Justin Fields,
I might not even go up on the podium if I'm pick 32.
Like, I'm not hugging Goodell on round 32 or pick 32.
Thanks.
Thanks, Goodell. He's like going up to you, running up to you with open arms, like,
and you're
like,
no, from me.
No, see ya. But I just had to bring it up. It's just so funny when I saw that tweet, as in it's like a tradition for him to hug players and all this. It's just weird to me. It's just odd, creepy.
What I would like to see them do, honestly, I thought the virtual draft, I thought they crushed it.
Yeah.
I'm surprised. Then again, I'm not surprised that they're going away from it so quickly, because it's all about the money.
Yep. No. I mean, it makes sense to do it in person.
The city of Cleveland is going to make tens of millions of dollars just in tourist revenue.
They're going to love it.
It'll be fun.
Cleveland's going to love it. They're going to enjoy it, just because they want to get as many people as they can for any event, because Cleveland gets a bad rap for a good reason. So, yeah, we'll see what happens at the draft and everything else happening right now with the Twins, Wild, whatever it may be. But I think they'll do it for another episode. Very, very good discussion here. A lot of good points made by our very own Dev and Seth Tupal. We want to thank you both for coming on today's episode of the
Topol.
Minnesota Topol. Did I say it wrong? Tupal.
Second time you did. Dude, it's okay. It's
so
okay.
It's Topol. Yeah. Tupal. It's not. Topol. Topol.
It's a little intimidating, because like, you're not used to it.
Yeah, there's no E there. Yeah. I don't want to be that idiot. So
I just separate it into
Topol. Topol.
The two syllables.
Topol. So Seth Topol, very own Dev. We want to thank you guys for coming on the episode.
My pleasure.
Minnesota Run On, great stuff to talk about. And guys, again, I mean, any videos or anything related to this week's episode, there should be a poll attached to it where you can vote if you feel so strongly about either of these individuals on here, about any points they made or arguments, anything like that. You can go ahead and vote, and certainly make sure also, you know, make sure that you go on our website, 10ktakesmn.com. You may see a blog from our very own Dev, but they're more than likely edited from from Dev. He edits a lot of our blogs, does a fantastic job with that. And Seth Topol, I got it. There we go. Host the Locked On Wild podcast, a very informative Wild podcast. If you want to go in even further of more what we talked about, you can get more shit from him, good shit from him. So I want to thank you guys again for coming on the Minnesota Rundown. If you guys want to check out more of our stuff here at 10,000 Takes, just make sure you follow us on any social media platform. 10K Takes. Remember, our Twitter did change to 10K_takes, but we're everywhere else you'll find us. Just find that 10K logo. We're everywhere. We have some merch. We have some new merch coming soon, potentially with the Wild. So be looking out for that shit. That's going to be good shit in around May when playoffs start. But again, guys, thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Minnesota Rundown. I am JJ. Have a great week, everybody.